like to talk and read all things books and mystery.
Hello, sleuths. I'm Karen.
And I'm Kelly. Welcome to It's a Clue, a faux crime comedy podcast for bed and breakfast owners with a ghost problem. Mm-hmm. Today, Karen, we are discussing Nancy Drew and the Invisible Intruder, and I have a thought to ponder for you.
I am excited for this one. I actually know what the thought to ponder is, and it's so weird.
It's very weird. So in this book, there's a lot of shell collecting, like from various sea life. So I thought, what would an alien life form collect from humans?
I'm glad that I have had the day to think about this because it's such a good question. My immediate reaction to this of like, what would be intriguing and bizarre to them? I think clothing items.
Oh.
Or like jewelry maybe. Mm. Because as I pondered this, I'm suffering under the assumption that it's like the little gray alien stereotype.
Right.
Like they don't wear suits.
They're not wearing clothes. Yeah. No alien suits.
I think they would think like our abundance of shoes and adornments and weird shirts and hats and stuff. I feel like they would think that was really strange and interesting. And
it's a good one.
And there would be some sort of barter economy around it, right? There would be stuff that's really rare.
Mm.
That's, you know, like,
sure.
This particular shoe, for some reason, they've decided is really interesting. And they've only ever found one of them. And so it's worth, you know, 1,000 griblets. I don't know what their currency is.
Yeah. Oh, it's griblets. That's right. Yeah. How did you know?
That's my answer, I think.
I like that answer.
What is your answer? I love this.
I don't know that I have a good one. I mean, I think that makes perfect sense. The closest thing I could come to like the human equivalent of like a shell is like locks of hair or something.
Ooh.
Like that, but that it's not that unique. So I think your suggestion is better. Like, I don't think, you know, unless we get like real gruesome with it, I don't think they would want to collect
us,
offshoots of us, right?
Yeah.
Organic matter attached to us. So like my brain kind of went to vehicles.
You know what? I was just thinking that. I'm like, maybe they're really big and like our houses and our cars would be like fun little things they could.
Yeah.
Like a bag of marbles.
And yeah. Yes. And but like maybe not even like cars, but like cars and skateboards and bicycles and roller skates and, you know, anything with wheels on it, I think maybe they would find interesting, particularly if they're like in, you know, if they float everywhere, you know?
True.
Zero gravity.
Or like our gadgets, because their gadgets are probably way better than ours.
Sure.
And they're like, oh my gosh.
We've just got these dumb dingle hoppers and they've got ray guns.
This little iPhone, that's so cute.
Aw, they think they're people. Interesting. Well, if anybody out there has any thoughts on this, let us know.
Yeah.
This has been occupying some brain space, I'll admit.
All day long. Yeah. I've been thinking about this.
Because, like, I started thinking about it. I was like, it's such a weird thing that we do that, you know?
It is odd.
Anyway.
Taxidermy, too. But that's another conversation for another time.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Well, Karen, I think now is the time where we fire up the old PA for some daily announcements.
Daily announcements. It is time. First of all, let's make it a great day. Yay. I found a note in our mail cubby.
Oh, I love mail.
I do, too. I love when we get mail. So this is from our listener, Ben F. Hello, Ben. Thank you for writing in. I would like to read you this note from Ben, which is so delightful. I don't think he's going to hear it for a while because he says in the first sentence he's on episode 43 and is listening in chronological order. So I hope when you get here, you're happy. I hope you get here. All right. Ben writes, longtime listener, first time writer. I'm a ways behind. I'm just about to listen to episode 43. First of all, awesome podcast, sleuths. I've been meaning to write for a while.
Hey, thanks, Ben.
I am more familiar with the Hardy Boys than Nancy Drew. There are a lot of similarities as they were both Stratemeyer Syndicate properties. If you haven't seen it, check out this very cool website, HardyBoysOnline.net, which has some cool information about the revisions done in the 1960s, including, for the Hardy Boys, a cool chart showing when books were revised and a categorization of the types of revisions done to each book.
Oh, that's cool.
Yup. I checked it out earlier today, and it's awesome. Okay, nice. Back to Ben. He says, a lot of the history information on that site applies to other Stratemeyer Syndicate books, too. This also includes another favorite of mine, Tom Swift, in the revised 1960s Tom Swift Jr. In that case, with a science background, it is very interesting to compare to the 1920s books and see how much things have changed.
I bet.
I have a couple of book suggestions, too. The first two are obvious. I'd love to hear your take on a Hardy Boys book. Ben, you're going to be so happy because episode 57... Hardy Boys number one.
We do just that.
Ben writes, I would also love to hear about the 1980s and 90s super mysteries featuring the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew crossovers, which we also love. And I agree. We need to do those.
We'll definitely do those.
Ben says, since you are not winky face, this is directed at me, into all things paranormal, I also love the 1960s series, The Three Investigators, where there is always a logical explanation. It's a series that came much later, but has a lot of the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew spirit.
Oh, that's fun. I've never heard of that.
I hadn't either. I cannot wait. And then Ben says, lastly, if nothing else, you must read the Brixton Brothers series from 2009 to 2012, which is an absolutely hilarious new YA mystery series, which is also a not-so-subtle parody of Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew books, which the protagonist is basically reading while ending up in their own mysteries.
Love that. I feel like at least one other listener has recommended those before, so we need to definitely put those in the rotation.
The Super Sleuth Hopper. Mm-hmm. I agree. And then Ben says, best wishes, Ben. Thank you so much, Ben. These are phenomenal recommendations. We're going to read them all. HardyBoysOnline.net. This website is so cool. Everyone check it out.
That's cool. I can't wait to check that out. Thanks for writing in, Ben. We appreciate it.
Okay, so that concludes my daily announcement. Is there anything that you would like to announce to the class?
I do have an announcement. So we are coming upon our summer break. So I would like to give some information so that everyone knows what's happening. So our last episode of season 3 is going to be episode 66, which is our next episode, which will be released on May 23rd. Mm-hmm. So after this one, you get one more in season 3, and then we're going to take a summer break, and we'll be back in August. That being said, this would be a great time to consider becoming a Helen Corning supporter on Patreon, because throughout the summer break, we're going to continue to release short episodes periodically through Patreon that'll be exclusively for our Helen Cornings over on that platform. We're definitely open to suggestion on what we cover, but the plan is mini episodes talking about various film and TV adaptations, maybe some video games if we can ever figure out how to get a Mac version of anything, and, you know, general life updates. Probably take a few trips to the recommendation station, woo-woo, etc. So if you're interested in that and, you know, having a little bit of content over the summer to while away the hours with us, please find us over on Patreon. You can just go to their website and then search for It's a Clue Podcast, or the link is also in our Instagram bio.
Well said, Kelly. Well said.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, okay, before we talk about Nancy, I would love to know what you've been up to.
Oh, great. I would love to tell you. I would like to lobby a formal complaint to whoever can do something about the weather. It has been roughly 175 degrees in Ohio the past 3 weeks, and I'm displeased about it.
Oh, this explains why you sent me a text message asking me about window air conditioning units. I understand.
Yes. It has been so hot. This is starting in April, going into May, and I'm like, I'm over it. I am deeply over it already. So I'm just hoping that I can still get some good outdoor sit-around time in
You will.
I need the temp to go back down.
It shall. There's a huge storm front moving through right now. I'm supposed to have a thunderstorm here in about an hour, so we better hustle on recording.
We better talk fast. Yeah, we had one earlier today, and that helps a little bit, but really that's all.
Was there actual thunder?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh, I'm so jealous.
There was thunder, lightning, rain, the whole kit and caboodle, lady.
My favorite.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. I have been very busy.
I know you have.
Social engagements. So.
I admire that.
But after this is over, I just have to work the next 3 days.
Wow, when you say it like that.
I know, right? Sounds like a glut of free time, doesn't it? Yeah, like I only have to work my full-time job. anyway, that concludes my updates. Do you have any? What's going on with you?
I have been being outside a lot, lots of planting of things and weeding my garden and stuff like that. But I, per usual, have been having the weirdest dreams ever. And I had a very memorable one that I would like to tell you about, and I would like you to interpret it for me.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
I had a dream about 1 week ago in which current age me is hanging out with our current age mother. Mm-hmm. Who is holding an infant, like a
baby,
a tiny baby, like 4 months old, and says, "I have someone for you to meet," and hands me the baby, and it's me as a baby. It was in the dream. I was like, "Oh my gosh, she's so cute," and she was like really happy and smiley. And mom's like, "Look how smiley she is and stuff." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I just love her." And then one of my friends was there, and I handed her to my friend, and she was smiling and giggling at her. And I'm like, oh, do you think they know? Do you think the baby knows that they're, like, best friends in another timeline? And then I woke up, and I'm deeply unsettled.
So did you in your dream know that it was you as a baby that you were holding?
Yes.
Weird.
It was very weird, and I...
Have you Googled it?
No, I haven't. In the dream, it was like a happy thing. It was like, I was like, this is so cool. Who gets to do this? I'm holding myself as a baby. And
maybe you just felt like very connected to your youth or your younger self in that day or something.
I mean, I'm sitting here surrounded by toys, so.
Perfect. I think you're doing it all correct. Like. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if anybody out there knows what that would mean, or if you do like a, you know, an internet search and come up with something fascinating, let me know.
I would love to have more insight into this, because I felt happy in the dream and delighted, and then I woke up and I was immediately uncomfortable.
Yeah, you're like, I've got a little bit of the skeeves.
Like, that was weird. That was weird, because you're never supposed to meet yourself in an alternate timeline, baby or not.
Yeah, it's true. Did you have to go, like, kill a hippogriff right after or something? Save a hippogriff?
I didn't have to do anything. I just woke up and went to work.
See, if you'd read Harry Potter, you would know that that was a reference.
I know what a hippogriff is.
Oh. Sorry, I blew up.
All right. Let us go. Wait, no, you say it. I can't say it. You say it.
It's time for us to journey into the recommendation station. Woo woo woo. Do you have one for us today?
I do. This is a really fun one for me to recommend. I learned surreptitiously that a woman in my roller derby league is an author, and she has written, I think, 3 or 4 books. Her name is Penny Jones. Also, I didn't learn this from Penny herself. I learned this from the internet. She did not say, go read my book, but I was like, this is so amazing. So Penny Jones' book, it's called On the Bricks, and I loved it. It is about a woman who I think is in her mid-30s who has just gotten out of prison after 10 years for murder, but she didn't do it. And she goes back to her hometown. She's on parole, and she's living with her sister who runs like a women's shelter. Mm-hmm. And they need money, basically. And the main character learns that she has an inheritance she can claim from their dead father. But his one stipulation is that for her to receive all of this money, she has to prove her innocence.
Oh, and what a cool premise.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so, you know, she's obviously in a tight spot because she's on parole, so she's not supposed to engage with certain characters, mm-hmm. but she has to try to solve this mystery. And it's really good. I loved it. So On the Bricks by Penny Jones.
Thank you. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. What are you enjoying right now?
Well, I'm about halfway through the new Emily Henry book, which she's not a little known author, but
I've heard of her.
Book out. Yeah. Called Funny Story. Author is Emily Henry. And I mean, it's a rom-com. So if you are into a rom-com with a couple of chili peppers worth of spice, then this is the one for you. And all of her books are fantastic. So
I am enjoying this one on via audio as well. And it's narrated by my favorite audiobook narrator, Julia Whalen. And it's so good.
Fun. Yay.
I think it's perfect, got three chili peppers reading. At least. More than a couple.
At least three chili peppers. Yes.
Out of yes. five.
Out of five. Out of 5,000 chili peppers. yeah, so perfect little summer reading book.
So, love it.
Yeah. Would you be interested in telling us a little bit about the Nancy Drew book we read this week?
I would love to. It's Nancy Thank time, you. Y'all.
This Nancy is time.
The woman we're here to discuss. So today we read Nancy Drew and the Invisible Intruder. It is book number 46 in the Nancy Drew mystery series. It was written in 1969 by Harriet Stratemeyer Adams under the pen name Carolyn Keene.
Unique.
Okay, I have some fun facts. So in this book, as you have already mentioned, we are dealing with seashell enthusiasts. And there is a term for that, and I love it.
Really?
I might say I'm obsessed with this term.
What you is ready? It? I'm ready.
A seashell enthusiast is officially called a conchologist. Conchologist.
Like a conch shell?
Yes.
Love it.
Isn't that the best term you've ever heard?
That's great.
Yeah.
I would have also liked seashellologists.
That's really hard to say.
Yeah. It's true. I like conchologists. That's awesome.
And if you are a conchologist and didn't know this, there's a society for you. It is called the Conchologists of America. And if you're free in early June, they have a 5-day convention coming up. There are activities every day. There are sales. There are trades. The theme is that it's an Olympics theme this year. So you're supposed to dress up like Olympians from any era that you choose. And Kelly,
How does the Olympics intersect with seashells?
I don't think that it does. I think there's just a different theme every year. It's like it's Understood. 80s. It's 80s at the Conchologists of America seminar this year. There is something on the agenda which I could not find any additional information about, but it's called a snail parade. I may buy a ticket.
That probably takes up 3 whole days.
Like, I'm picturing tiny floats. I'm picturing tiny sashes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Tiny tiaras. Come on.
Absolutely. I mean, if it's not.
Should
they
be.
They need to reconsider what they call it.
I'll be the chair of the snail parade going forward.
Karen's like, I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I feel confident I can do a pretty good snail parade.
Well, I already love tiny things, and so I think I could knock it out of the park.
I think you could. I'll be a reference for you.
Thank you. Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome.
I also learned another scientific term. So we've got conchologist. The second one I learned is malacology, and that is the field of science which studies mollusks, which includes invertebrates, animals without a backbone. So like snails, slugs, clams, mussels, squid, octopus, a scallop, an oystie. So all of these spineless things, but which often have shells. So malacology is also important to this Nancy Drew book. Last but not least, we talk about rare expensive seashells in this book. So I googled what is the most expensive seashell. I don't know the actual answer to this question, but I found a better fun fact. So there was a shell called the Conus Gloria Maris.
Talk about this in the book.
Yes. So the fun fact is that in the 18th century, one of these Conus Gloria Maris shells sold for 3 times the price, paid the same year for Vermeer's now priceless painting, Woman in Blue Reading a Letter.
Are you serious?
Someone paid 3x for this shell what was paid for a Vermeer, one of the most famous wow. Vermeer paintings.
Wow.
And now they cost like $80 because
oh, why?
We've discovered the habitat for these shells and we have the technology to easily get to it and harvest them. But people didn't know how to find them and
fascinating.
And couldn't get to them. So there were like, you know, a handful of them yeah. around. And now you can go down to like your...
Yeah, like the advent of deep sea diving.
Yeah. And you can just wow. go down to like, you know, your gemstone, your crystal shop and probably buy one of these for... I mean, it probably wouldn't be... $10 like, but
50
like,
cents but yeah
it's not $1 million
it's anymore. Not it's not 3x of Vermeer
yeah isn't that nuts
that's wild
shells.
what an interesting quarter for scale
and thank you so much I yeah. feel since I delivered this do I qualify as a conchologist of America
in my book hands down yes you do
I have one fact okay cool
I'll whip out my laminator and get you something
I would love a badge. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Okay, so that is my nerdy information. Let's love quickly it. Do some fun things. It's time for our one-sentence plot competition.
My turn. So I'm sure you all know what one-sentence plots are by now, but basically over on our Instagram, we ask folks to look at the cover of the book and give us their guess in one sentence as to what the book is about based solely on the cover art.
Yep.
In this book, the cover looks thusly. Nancy Drew and a dark-haired man stand in a very dark cellar-type room. Behind them floats a stingray that also looks a bit like a ghost. And on the mantle sits two very human-looking skulls.
Spooky.
So our winner is Cesar Gons, who says, breaking the fourth wall... Nancy stared at the audience and said, "Gee, Ned, I only said it was time to take our relationship to the next level. You look like you've seen a ghost." Winked coyly and walked on, never realizing that Ned had actually seen a ghost and couldn't be bothered with romance at that precise moment. Perfect.
Perfect. Love it. Very so good. Accurate of our...
Very accurate.
...heroine.
Mm-hmm. Great, great creative punctuation, as we encourage...
Theater reference, breaking the fourth
theater
wall.
Theater five stars, no notes. do you have a runner-up?
I do. I selected the submission from at Honey and Hot Tea, we love you, who wrote, after her initial shock of a giant stingray over the mantel place on her expensive and mysteriously paid-for trip to a secret island, Nancy finally spots the skulls and realizes she might be in the most dangerous game.
Also perfect.
Yes, yes, I love it. We got a short story reference there. The most dangerous uh-huh. game. Fantastic short story.
Fantastic short story. And she would not be wrong to be nervous, I think.
Agreed.
In that specific way.
Agreed. <Yeah. laughs>
Well, Karen, now, without further ado, it is time for today's super fast plot, which has been written and shall be read by you.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually really proud of this one. Sometimes I'm iffy, but this one I feel really good about, so I oh, hope yay. You enjoy it.
I will. I will.
Helen Corning is back, and she invites the Clue Crew, plus their gentleman callers, on a five-stop ghost-hunting vacation adventure. Along with three other couples, this mega-sleuthing posse will scout out the following. Stop number one, Pine Grove Camp, which has a haunted self-propelling canoe. Stop number two, a medium's seance space, where thunder occurs during the sessions. Stop number three is the Red Barn Guest House, where several people have seen a phantom horse racing across a field at night with a ghost rider running after it. Stop number four, a mountaintop inn which used to be an old fort and where the ghosts of prisoners are reported to be, and I quote, flitting around. And finally, stop number five, a huge estate where the owner is a skull and shell collector and night after night there's an invisible intruder in the mansion. Pack your bags, sleuths, we've got a lot of ground to cover. In each stop, the crew does encounter the ghostly apparitions, but are able to quickly debunk them as hoaxes. Much of the trickery seems to have been rigged up by someone quite mechanically minded, including radio remote controls, mechanical dummies, and gaseous hazes that take humanoid forms. Clues start to point collectively back to Beatrice and Wilbur Prizer, who have been sighted around the area and even staying in some of the haunted lodgings. They've also been putting in insultingly low offers to buy these properties, all of which have been suffering due to rumors of hauntings. At the medium's seance, stop number two on vacation, it becomes fairly clear that Madame Tarantella may also be tangled up in this. She foists a trunk of letters onto Nancy, against her will, and tells her someone is threatening to kill her. When this trunk accidentally bursts open, Nancy and Helen find a rare seashell which, as luck would have it, points back to the criminals we're already tailing. They seem to be targeting and robbing people with rare, expensive seashell collections, as well as trying to perpetrate real estate fraud. So many scary things happen. George is nearly struck by lightning. Ned and Nancy sink a canoe, and then Ned gets dragged away by a man and a robotic octopus. Ned gets kidnapped again, jumps out of a moving car, and travels on foot to the next destination on the ghost hunting tour. Nancy gets horribly burned. Everyone is struggling. At our final location, the Skull and Shell Collector's house, the evil butler, Jeffers, locks the entire game into an underground cage with a Diplodocus skeleton. You heard me right. They are able to jimmy a wall open, and inside the passageways, they rescue a little boy who has been held hostage by the bad guys for overhearing too much. They bust out, tie up the evil butler, and use the hidden microphone in a taxidermied stingray to lure the rest of the villains to the scene. The Clue crew and police lay in wait and overhear the Prizers and Madame Tarantella confess all of their ghostly hoaxes. Everyone goes to jail. The Skull and Shell Collector invites the Clue crew to spend the night at his mansion, and Nancy remains burdened with Madame Tarantella's mysterious trunk of papers, at least until she gets out of prison. The end.
Wow. You were right to feel proud about that one.
Thank you. This so much happened, and I can't believe that I was able to summarize it.
Yeah. And you even used the preferred pronunciation for Diplodocus.
I love that word.
I had no idea. I thought it was Diplodocus.
I think it's Diplodocus. You don't get to say it every day. And so it's honestly a treat when you do.
Yeah, it feels good. Get to bust that one out.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Thank you. Okay. I am dying to know what you thought of this. Please tell me your general thoughts and musings, a.k.a. your GT&Ms.
I loved this book.
Yay!
I loved it so much. It's like top three favorite Nancy Drew books to date.
Yep.
Helen's back. We have like this big group adventure with like some true characters in the mix, which is fun. We get to go to like multiple destinations. We are firmly in the 60s at this point. Like, there's lots of cools and groovies floating around. I'm into it.
Oh, I'm into it. In addition to saying cool and groovy, they say dilly a lot.
They say dilly. Yeah, there were some real good 60s and 70s slang in this one I liked. So what did you think about it? GT&Ms, please and thank you.
Oh my gosh, my note that I wrote is, why is this the best Nancy Drew book ever? We are aligned. I thought that the trail of mysteries and how they became interwoven was so fun. To your point, the cast of characters, like these seven couples on the trip together, was really fun.
Yeah.
We had a seance. We had dinosaur skeletons and cages and dungeons. Kelly, I was obsessed with this book from page one, and I don't think I'll ever recover.
Yay. Yeah, I was into it very quickly as well. There's just like a different, I don't know, like it felt paced differently, and I don't know. I really liked it.
It had like this immediate vibe that was just real good. Like, the vibes are good with this book.
Yes. Yes, they are.
We should have said that like when we were getting our English majors. They're like, what do you love about Jane Eyre? And you're like, the vibes, man.
The vibes are immaculate.
Good vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Rochester starts out rough, but wait till the end.
Kelly, I would like to give you the honor of going first to talk about your first favorite thing about this book that we love.
I think I'm going to go with the friend group.
Oh, I love it. Good choice.
Yes. We've done some like outings with non Bess and George but we've never done anything in this big of a friend group before with like so many unknown people.
Yeah.
So yeah, like there are seven couples on this trip, one of whom are Helen and Jim of Helen Nay Corning Archer.
And her Helen husband, Jim and Nay Corning.
And they organized this whole trip because they've been hearing about, like, you know, spooky things going on. And they're like, let's go on a ghost hunting trip. And they just invite all their buddies. And it's just fun. Like, it just shows to Goya that, like, when you introduce some new characters and, like, the more people you have to interact with, the more fun we can potentially have. So
I agree.
Yeah. That's not to say I don't love just the Clue Crew, but this was a fun change of pace. So I also have to say one of my favorite new additions to this group is Rita.
Yes.
Who is she's half of a married couple. I don't remember what her husband's name is, but she fancies herself a bit of a psychic.
She does.
Yeah. She completely believes in ghosts and spirits. She's really kind of gets irritated with Nancy and Ned at one point because they keep debunking all of these ghost stories. And she's getting a little bit aggravated because she for sure believes in it and I think feels a little maybe judged. Yeah. So
doesn't she she claims to have ESP. Yes.
She does. Yes. And she gives a couple of predictions, which I think we're going to talk about later. But she gives a few predictions, but like at some point she kind of clams up because she's realizing that like Nancy's going to find that every single one of these potential ghosts is tied back to some kind of mechanical device or chemical device that has been rigged. So I think she just kind of is like, never mind. Yeah. How about you? Do you have one?
I have a bit of a double whammy.
Ooh.
So I actually really liked that we returned to kind of early Nancy mysteries with these financially motivated property crimes.
Mm-hmm.
This is for sure not the first time that we've seen fake hauntings to try to get owners to sell or move out.
Absolutely.
We have the three criminals. Well, four criminals, I guess. There are three prizers.
Mm-hmm.
There's Wilbur and Beatrice, who are married. The father of Wilbur,
mm-hmm.
who just seems a little bit along for the ride to me. But
mm-hmm.
And then we have Madame Tarantella, who is a cousin, who is mm-hmm. the medium. And basically their whole racket is they're committing theft at various mm-hmm. places, primarily of expensive seashells. But they're also doing these hauntings to try to get people out of their property for little to no money.
Mm-hmm.
But what is unique about these criminals is that they're pretty high tech, I would say, as far as our usual run-of-the-mill perps go.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
And what I mean by this is that, so there are these feats of engineering, and I would like yeah. to give you some examples.
Please.
The ghost that's haunting, I think the second, one of the places that we go to, this ghost in the forest, is like a blow-up animatronic balloon doll.
Yeah.
Hovering and wandering through the forest. It's a blow-up doll, but it moves.
But it can move, right?
Yeah. We also have a mysterious self-propelling canoe
mm-hmm.
that is radio remote controlled. I feel like our dad would love to talk about yeah. this.
And one of the coolest things about this canoe is not only is it remote controlled to make it move through the water, there's mechanisms that are attached to the bottom of the boat that make the oars row.
Yes. Yep.
Which is even spookier, you know, because like you can kind of convince yourself that a canoe moving through the water is just like been caught in some kind of like little current or something. But I don't know what's making those oars move, right?
Creepy. Yes,
very cool.
It's like a haunted rowing team. Oh, and in the same place, I think this is called like Lake Severain is where we are.
Uh-huh.
There is a full-on animatronic robotic octopus.
Yeah.
That almost kills Ned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
We have these smoke bombs. Pause
for 1 second. I'll just say as a reminder that Dave and Bert go out and find this thing, and then they like fling it at the girls to make them scream because they don't realize at that point that it's not a real octopus.
I would have been unhappy.
Uh-huh. Displeased.
I don't know if I'd be more upset about a real octopus getting flung at me or a robot octopus. Both are awful options.
Oh, I mean, I'd take the robot, but yeah, I don't like either.
I'd rather have the real one. The robot is, really? Could be unhinged. It's controlled by AI. It could be evil. A real octopus is going to be like, oh no, I'm on land. Help.
I love that you'd rather take your chances with a giant octopus than a possibly sentient robot.
1,000%. Without question.
The name of the episode, possibly sentient robot.
There are some things I don't understand about this, which we'll talk about later, but we also have these like chemical ghosts. They're like smoke bomb ghosts that happen a couple of times that erupt and look like a kind of humanoid spirit wafting away. That happens twice, I believe.
Yeah.
My favorite, though, if I may give a gold medal to my favorite contraption, is the thing I mentioned in Super Fast Plot Overview, which, just let me refer to how I wrote it, because I'll never say it right again. A taxidermy stingray with a hidden microphone in it.
Uh-huh.
It's got a walkie-talkie in it. And they realize that it's not just a taxidermy stingray because its eyes periodically blink. They're like, there's some sort of device in this. And then they hear a voice coming out of it that's like, hello, hello. And they have to whisper a secret code into the stingray to continue the conversation. And the secret code is the name of the book, Invisible Intruder. And I just cannot with how much I loved this.
It's pretty good.
The best.
May I also remind you that at some point they're talking about how dangerous stingrays are, and they refer to them as rattlesnakes of the sea.
Oh my god, I was like, well, and Kelly, like, will never like this animal again.
I don't feel like that's true. Like, I don't think they're as dangerous as rattlesnakes.
They're pretty bad.
Well,
that's what killed.
I know.
Steve,
but wasn't that kind of a fluke?
Steve. Oh no, yeah. I feel so bad.
Crocodile Hunter.
Yeah. All I can think of is Steve Martin, and that is not correct.
No, no.
Irwin.
Irwin. There you go. There you go. Rattlesnakes of the sea. Don't love that.
Did you? Okay. Did you have anything in that category you wanted to discuss?
No, I'm good.
Okay, great. What's your next favorite thing?
Nancy and Ned.
Oh.
I loved them in this book.
Lay it on me.
I thought Ned was great in this book.
I agree.
He was just like, he was a total dream boy. I liked him a lot. But also, Ned gets napped again. So this is the second book in a row where Ned has been kidnapped. And I was kind of laughing because was it just me or was everyone like fairly casual about this kidnapping?
So casual. And Nancy's losing her Titian hair. She's about to have a heart attack and everyone's like, he'll turn up.
Well, even the police, because the police arrive on scene very quickly. I think they were driving by or something. And she's like, hey, so my boyfriend has been kidnapped. He's gone missing. And they're like, oh no, that's terrible. Why don't you come back to the station 10 miles from here and fill out some paperwork first? And maybe don't do that. And then when she finally gets back to look for him, they can't really find anything. So everybody's just like, well, I guess we better go back to the hotel and go to the restaurant and have some dinner because it's about that time.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
Only Nancy is like pacing her hotel room waiting for him to come. So that brings me to my next amazing thing about Ned and Nancy in this book. We find out that they have established a duress code. Not dress, duress, under duress.
I was like, wait, what?
an emergency code.
Secret emergency code. I forgot about this.
Yeah, so she's in her room, like, so upset, Ned's missing, what is she going to do, blah, 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 and the phone rings, and it's Ned. And he basically says, like, here's where I am, here's what happened, I want all of you guys to come meet me at this, like, you know, tertiary location tomorrow, at which point Nancy thinks to herself, maybe Ned is being held prisoner and is being directed to say these things, and he's luring us into a trap. So she asks him what his correct, what his right name is. And he tells her, I can't remember what the name is, but she goes, oh, then he's fine. If he had been a prisoner, he would have said, I keep my middle name a secret.
I love it.
But he tells her his middle name. And that's how she knows he's okay.
Ugh.
Love it. Love it. It's the best thing that's happened in safety since we got a flashlight.
I agree. We have come a long way from Old Clock, book number one, correct, where we didn't leave a note and we're locked in a closet. So, like,
thank you. I couldn't glad have said it better myself.
Learning from our mistakes.
The last thing I will say is that there is a hint of a future Ned proposal. So,
I know.
Nancy, do you remember this?
I do.
I guess this would have been the medium, right?
Yes. Yep, the medium.
The medium is giving Nancy a little reading, impromptu reading, and she says, a tall, dark, good-looking college man is very dear to you. In the future, you will be asked to make a decision involving this friend.
Ooh.
Oh, insert shimmy right here.
Love so, yeah, it.
Lots of fun with Ned and Nance in this one. So.
Well, Kelly, that actually goes into the thing that I wanted desperately to say, and it is so sweet of you to save this one for me. So the medium,
I was so excited,
also makes a prediction about Bess.
Uh-huh.
In the middle of the seance, too.
Uh-huh.
She specifically says, there's someone here named Bess. And they're talking about people going,
I like
going,
your medium voice. That's
yes,
good.
Oh, there are spirits around. I sound very believable. There was a conversation happening about, like, going to, like, City Hall, basically. Uh-huh. And the medium says, this person named Bess will also soon be visiting City Hall. And it's implied that it's to get a marriage license. And she says it will happen very soon. And Bess becomes very distraught because she's like, but Dave has to finish college first, so it can't be soon. So who is this that I'm going to marry? Like, Bess gets very upset. Mm-hmm. And Nancy and George think this is very funny. And they're like, oh, my God, Bess, just calm down. It's fine. Everything's fine. Then they, of course, immediately bump shoulders with Dave on the way out of this.
Uh-huh.
And he's all like, hey, guys, what's going on? Hey, Bess. Hey, babe. What's up? And she sees him and immediately turns neon red and is so uncomfortable. And the friends just start ribbing her so hardcore. They're like, yeah, she got some news that's got her really shaken up, Dave. And he's like, Bess, what was it? And she's like, you guys, stop it. And he keeps asking and they keep teasing. And she is just about to spit nails.
Herself.
She's so embarrassed. So I loved that. I thought it was very cute. And it's the first time.
Cute.
I don't know, like, we've always called Ned and Bert and Dave, like, the special friends or their favorite dates. But in this one, you can tell, like, Bess really loves him.
Yeah.
Like, she's thinking about a future with him. And I don't know. I thought that,
like,
was charming.
Like, when marriage comes up, the only person she thinks about is Dave. It's not like, oh, well, who would that be?
Yeah, you know? I have no idea.
Right. Yeah. Very cute.
The other thing the medium said that was so funny was that she looks at Nancy and is like, I see a boating accident in the future. And I was like, girl, same.
Yeah. Right. You and me too, lady.
As do I.
This medium is clearly a fraud. Anyone could have seen a boating incident coming.
We've had 40 other books that proved this.
Oh, that's funny. So I have one more to wrap up. So the entire end of this book is just a madcap escapade. So
it's incredible.
They wind up at this, you know, at their final destination, which is this, like, eccentric millionaire's mansion who is a shell collector. And
wait, no, Kelly, he's a shell and skull collector.
I'm sorry. Right. Mobby. That's on me. So they wind up at his house and the butler lets them in, and they had asked to, like, be let in to see the shell collection. So he shows them the shell collection and then says, oh, but you have to come down to the basement. We have even more amazing things down there. And says, we have dinosaur bones. What am I looking for?
Diplodocus.
Diplodocus skeletons. What's the word for it?
A skeleton.
Okay. Is there not a dinosaur-y word for that?
Skeletonisis. I don't know. I don't know.
That's it. Yeah. So they're going to go down and see these Diplodocus fossils, which he's already told him. He's like, yeah, we have them in a cage. And Nancy's like, well, that's weird. Like, the dinosaur can't run away. Like, why do you have it in a cage? So I was like, well, don't go down there. Obviously, this is all made up. But nay, nay, there is, in fact, a Diplodocus skeleton in a cage downstairs. But Nancy's spidey senses were correct in that Jeffers is trying to get them all to step into said cage so that he can slam the door behind them. Uh-oh. Now they're all trapped with a dinosaur. Well, Jeffers walks away, and we now have one of the best moments in any... Like, not since...
When they hid in the picture frames?
Hiding in the picture frames.
I knew it. I can read your mind.
You can. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Not since hiding in the picture frames has there been a better Scooby-Doo moment in one of these books. So Ned is able to, like, he finds a loose something in this cage and is able to get himself out. And they're all going to leave, but then Nancy's like, no, because Jeffers is going to come down and realize that we're loose. We need a plan first. So Ned stays free, and then they hear Jeffers coming, and Nancy's like, he's going to look in here and realize that Ned's escaped, so we need to cover for him. So what we're going to do is we're all going to hide behind this skeleton, and we'll only reveal ourselves one at a time. It's because it's her and Helen and Jim and Ned. So she's like, Jim, you're going to have to also pretend to be Ned the second time you come out from behind the skeleton. That's what they do. And, like, you know, Jeffers is like, well, there was another guy in here. Where's he? So Jim's like, let me go get him, and goes behind the skeleton and, like, takes off his hat and changes, like, turns his sweater inside out and, like, changes his part and messes his hair up.
Yeah,
and
they comes said back he, out like, and is he, like, pulled his hair down in front of his face. And So I was like, oh, does Ned have emo bangs?
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, he's, like, very,
he's
what's
indie.
His name from Boy Meets World?
Sean.
Sean. Aw, yeah. Anyway, it was a pretty good moment. And so they basically have this little hide and seek moment, and it's great. And then they all escape and they find teenage boy Steve Rover, who was also kidnapped and he's been locked up. So they rescue him. Yeah, it was just... And then Jeffers comes back down and they knock him out and tie him up and throw him in with the dinosaur. The end.
The end. This book is... It's got something for everybody.
Sure does. If you thought you weren't going to be into it, then they have a dinosaur.
Yeah, and a stingray with a walkie-talkie in it.
Correct. I'm like, this is as crazy and fun as the blowing up the moon one.
Yes, the oranges and the...
Yeah.
Yep, oranges I agree.
And NASA and the Dr. Evil lair of boiling lava. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Love
I
it.
Loved it.
Do you have any It Would Have Been Awesome Ifs? Any improvements to make on this book?
Here is my slightly meandering statement in response to that.
Oh, do tell me.
I honestly wouldn't change anything about it.
Same.
I thought this book was extremely awesome. And yeah, it was just so good. This doesn't answer your question, but it would be awesome if there were more Nancy Drew books like this one.
I agree.
I think I agree. What I like, if I had to distill it down to what I specifically love, is that it started out as a vacation and the mystery just kind of found us and evolved, mm-hmm. which was is so unique to these books because 99% of the time we have a very specific task that is stated on chapter one, page one, and it's like, we have to go solve this thing. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was like, ooh, want to go ghost hunting? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And then this organic mystery emerged that we were able to kind of play along and go around the game board with. And it just is so different than the other ones. And it felt so refreshing and fun.
Perfectly said. I completely agree with you.
Thank you. What are your thoughts? What did you have any It Would Have Been Awesome Ifs?
I mean, genuinely, no improvements to be made. The only thing I think would have been interesting is that I feel like in the midst of all of this ghostiness, and we've also introduced a medium and Rita who has ESP, so she says, I thought it would be kind of interesting if there was one ghost mystery that we weren't able to solve.
Oh.
And like, maybe Rita had some kind of little, you know, vision about it or something. Like, you know, maybe there was just one little loose end that we weren't able to tie up. Like, for example, maybe in the big confession scene at the end, Nancy said, you know, Nancy basically asks them about, you know, for example, the ghost horse and how they did that. And they go, we have no idea what you're talking about.
Like, wait, what? Yeah, right. We didn't do a horse.
Right. So I just think it would have been kind of fun if there was just like one little, like, maybe there is something. Maybe there is something out there.
There's something more than meets the eye. Oh, I love that. I love that. That even makes Nancy question herself. Like,
yeah, just a little. Maybe everything's not quite so easily black and whited.
Yeah, the universe isn't as buttoned up as you thought, Miss Drew.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. That was a really good answer.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I thought about it before this.
Really good at this.
So are you. We're both so smart and pretty.
Woo! Okay. Kelly, I have some loose things to add to Nancy's resume.
Oh, very good.
And you know what? I kind of like that they're loose because it made this book more believable. She wasn't like suddenly speaking fluent Mandarin or like flying a plane or something. These are more like normal girl detective things, which I honestly really enjoy.
Give me some examples.
So you mentioned the hide and seek situation, which is inarguably the best part of the book with the dinosaur skeleton. That is so sneaky and devious of her.
Yeah.
Which is not her usual MO.
No.
It was like pranky. And
yeah.
I was kind of
like, we're going to trick him.
I was kind of surprised that she thought of that so quickly because it seemed out of character, but in a way that I liked. I was like, oh, you got a little mean streak in you, Nancy.
Yeah. No, you're right. I hadn't thought about that.
My next item to describe the evolution of Nancy Drew. So we are going, you know the word unflappable?
Yes.
So Nancy is always unflappable.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to assume that the opposite of that is flappable.
That is correct.
Maybe bothered, but I'm using flappable.
I like flappable.
She only becomes flappable in this book when Ned is in danger.
Oh, that's right.
She's a cool cucumber all the time, but then when no one will take Ned seriously, she is like distraught. And that was very humanizing to see.
It was. It was. Very, very good point.
Thank you. And then my final thing about our queen, Miss Drew, is that I like that she knows when to ask for legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely knows the extent of her expertise. She's like, I'm the sleuth, but like, I'm not a lawyer. And when Madame Tarantella, the medium, says like, you have to take this box of paperwork, you have to keep it safe. Don't open it. Don't look at it. You just have to keep it and hide it. Nancy's like, no, I've seen a lot of movies where this ends badly. So she calls her dad and is like, what should I do legally as my attorney? And he's like, absolutely do not keep that box. You don't want to touch it. You want nothing to do with this. So I appreciate that she knows when she's over her skis a little bit, but has a resource to reach out to correct that.
Agreed. That takes a bigger understanding of the situation to know when to call in a different department.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Nice.
Do you have any lingering questions that are going to keep you up at night about this book?
You know, my biggest lingerer is that I want to know why we had a ghost horse at the Red Barn guest house. Like, was this a deliberate callback to Redgate Farm? It just, it seems very, like, it feels, not only is it a ghost horse, but we're at a red barn.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's just, it's been bugging me. I'm like, this feels intentionally on the nose, but maybe it was just a coincidence or something. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. Or it's like Harriet Stratemeyer Adams has like a plot wheel on her wall where she like threw a dart at and she was like, red barn ghost horse. Okay, that's what we're doing. All right. Again.
Well, that's what the wheel said. So the wheel has spoken.
I didn't put that together.
Oh, it immediately bugged me.
Now it will bug me too. Wow, I won't sleep either tonight. Thank you.
How about you? What's keeping you up?
Okay, so the reason that the medium's seance hut, as they call it, is on this ghost hunting tour vacation situation.
Uh-huh.
Helen was like, the rumor has it that thunder, like very realistic thunder, starts happening.
Right.
While people are in the seances. And then they, you know, when they go in, it's like bright and sunny. And then they go out and it's bright and sunny and the weather's perfect. And Nancy's like, it's got to be a hoax, like something they're mm-hmm. doing in the room, in the space. And we never debunked that one, I don't think.
Because, we didn't because it gets burned down, right?
Well, and we go in and Nancy's like, there's no way like real thunder is going to happen in here. Right. Y'all. It's 70 and sunny. Like, there's not a cloud in the sky.
It's clearly a hoax.
No thunder happens during the seance, but they leave. And then all of a sudden, lightning and thunder starts happening. And that's when George almost gets struck by lightning.
Yeah.
So maybe that.
Maybe that.
To your point about it would have been awesome if maybe that's our.
Yeah. Our unresolved ghostening.
Yeah, Madame Tarantella. Maybe she controls the weather, which you said at the beginning. You should speak to her about the heat wave.
I am writing a letter as we speak. Care of the River Heights Jail.
Okay, so it is time for us to rate this absolute stunner. I'm so excited because I know what I'm going to say, and I bet you're going to say something similar. This week, we are rating Nancy Drew and the Invisible Intruder out of a 12 possible surveillance stingrays.
It's a good one.
Good luck making that image for our Instagram.
Thanks a lot.
Kelly, what is your rating?
12 out of 12 surveillance stingrays.
Yes.
Genuinely one of my favorite books yet. Great vibes. Loved it. Loved it. I feel unrequired to justify it further than that. It was perfect. No notes. How about you? What'd you give it?
I also gave it 12 out of 12 surveillance stingrays. Yes. Flawless. The highest of praise. I loved the feats of engineering. I loved the ending. The friends, both new and old. Honestly, I might read it again. I loved it so much.
Aw. Yeah, it was great. I was not expecting to like this one at all.
I didn't know what to expect. But the cover was alarming with that.
It was so alarming.
Ghostly stingray, and then it's the best book I've ever read.
Yeah, it was so good.
Full stop. So
good. Yeah, Victor Hugo, take a seat.
Okay, so as much as it pains me to say this, we will have to read another book after this. I just want to live in this book forever, but we will continue.
And hope that Sally Forth.
They're all as good. What are we reading next?
Next, we are discussing Nancy Drew and the Mysterious Mannequin, in which the Clue crew travels to Istanbul.
Oh, fun.
Not Constantinople.
Well played. If you would like to, it would mean a lot to us if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, tell a friend, and you can find us on Instagram at It's a Clue Podcast.
And we already encouraged you to become a Helen Corning friend on Patreon, so we won't do that again, but you can find us there on www.patreon.com/itsacluepodcast.
Most importantly, I want everyone to remember what we learned today in Nancy Drew and the Invisible Intruder.
What did we learn, Karen?
Kelly, you must exercise extreme caution if the perp that you're tailing is an engineering expert, because anything, and I mean anything, could be a secret robot.
Very true. And it will be.
It will.
And with that,
happy sleuthing!
It's a Clue is hosted by Kelly Biscopink and Karen Farmer. Our logo is designed by Courtney Kyle. You can find her on social media at I Am Courtney Kyle. The It's a Clue theme song was written and recorded by Danny W. You can find her on Facebook at Danny W. Music. Audio engineering is graciously done by our friend Mark Goodlow.